Smart Girl Tribe is the UK's number one female empowerment organisation. Through the Smart Girls Handbook, the Smart Girl Summits, and this very podcast, we help women design a life and business they love. If you are looking to connect with other women or learn about boundaries, following your passion, building a business, navigating heartbreak, coping with mental health issues, among other topics, this is the destination for you. I'm Scarlett V. Clark, your host. Twice a month, I interview thought leaders and game changers to have honest conversations about womanhood for you to redefine your impossible. Hello, girlies. Happy December. Welcome back to the Smart Girl Tribe podcast. Over the summer, I read a book which I genuinely believe changed my life called 13 Things Mentally Strong Women Don't Do. I called Amy Morin, the author, and I invited her immediately onto the podcast just to dive in deeper and to have this conversation for all of you. It is a fantastic episode. We dive into emotional resilience, the difference between mental strength and mental health, how you can develop resilience if you struggle with anxiety. Like me, we talk about her books, the best takeaways, the best strategies to help you develop emotional resilience. So I know you're going to enjoy this one as much as I did recording it. Amy's new book is coming out the 26th of December, 13 Things Mentally Strong Couples Don't Do. Hi, Amy. Thank you so much for being here today on the Smart Girl Tribe podcast. Could you begin by explaining to the audience what resilience is, and is it just being mentally strong?
Thank you for having me. And what a great first question, because a lot of people seem to think that the two words mean the same thing. But resilience is really about bouncing back from hard times. But I think it would be awful if we lived our whole lives just trying to build mental strength because we're waiting for the other shoe to drop, like we're waiting for the next tragedy. So mental strength is really about figuring out how to be your best self in all of life. And there are ups and there are downs, but it's not just about bracing ourselves for something horrible to happen, which is really what resilience is. It's about overcoming the bad things. But mental strength, while it does include how do you overcome challenges, it's also about how do you enjoy the good times. As a therapist, I see plenty of people who say when life is going well, like they get anxiety because they're waiting for the next shoe to drop, or they feel like when life is good, they can't fully enjoy it because they don't feel like they deserve it. Or plenty of people who are perfectionists tend to sabotage themselves. So there's so many things about making sure that we can enjoy the good times too. And that's really what mental strength is about.
Why should we strive to be mentally strong? Why is it important?
It's really the key to getting the most out of life. And by that, I mean enjoying every moment to its fullest, which, yes, there are sad times, there are tough times, but knowing that you can experience those emotions, but that they're temporary. And also so we can reach our greatest potential. We can do so much more than we think, and our brain will lie to us and it will tell us that we're not capable or we're not competent. But when you build mental strength, you learn how to challenge your brain and really put yourself out there to do things that at one time, I guarantee, you would have thought you couldn't do.
So what exactly blocks us from being mentally strong? Is it fear or is it something else?
It's a combination of things. So our brain learns to see us in a certain light based on life experiences. If you got made fun of when you were 7 on the school bus because you wore a certain kind of clothing, then maybe as an adult, you still have that little bit of thing in your brain that says, hey, we want to fit in here. So make sure that the clothes you wear aren't things that are going to get you made fun of, or make sure you don't do anything weird. It's like these little things that happen to us in life that teach us about the world. But all the things that happen to us aren't amazing things. Sometimes we grow up with a family that maybe doesn't treat us the way that a family should, or we encounter certain obstacles and problems. And then we start to learn about ourselves, like, oh, I'm not good at math, or I'm not the kind of person who can speak up. And then when we learn those things, they work really well in certain situations. Maybe you learn, just don't speak up, and then you don't get in trouble. And that might've worked well for you when you were 8. But then when you're 45 and you're in a meeting, that same skill that got you through those times might not be applicable right now. So mental strength is about knowing, no, I can speak up, or I can do things that are contrary to my brain. Or when my brain says, hey, you can't do that, I'm going to put myself out there and try it anyway.
Amazing. And do you think some people are better at being mentally strong compared to others? And if so, why do you think that is?
It's a combination of things. So one is our personality. Certain personalities are able to put themselves out there, take risks, and they're not as afraid of things like embarrassment. Other factors are our life experiences, the way you grew up, the way that you got through life, what your experiences were in school, whether you've been through trauma and tragedy, how many good times you've had. And then there's definitely a genetic component too. We know that there's a biology that plays a role in our mental health overall, but it's not predetermined. There's so many factors that we do have control over, but we don't have control over all of them.
So what is almost then the opposite of being mentally strong? Is it being mentally weak or emotional?
So I hate to use the word weak because I think we all possess mental strength to a degree. Like people aren't either physically strong or physically weak. We all have certain strengths, or somebody might be good at certain exercises, but not others. You could go to the gym and lift weights with just your arms and have legs that aren't very strong, but have really strong arms. So we have certain strengths in different areas. And then to your question about emotional, I think a lot of people think like if you don't cry at a funeral, you must be mentally strong. Or if you put yourself through incredibly tough physical challenges, that's a sign of mental strength. But that's not necessarily true. We see athletes sometimes, some of the best athletes in the world, who struggle with a gambling addiction. Or we learn later that they use drugs to enhance their performance, so they actually were cheating all along, or things like that. And it really takes strength to acknowledge your emotions, to experience them, to express them to other people. So crying can be a sign of incredible strength. So I think it's just about knowing that you don't have to believe everything you think. And then when it comes to the emotional aspect, we can learn to manage our emotions so that our emotions don't control us. And also our behavior, that there's always some kind of productive action that we can take no matter what kind of circumstances we face.
So how would you, being the expert in this field, describe someone who is living as a mentally strong person? And the reason why I ask this is because only last week, 10 days ago, one of my girlfriends, she said to me that she was talking about me and she said, "You are just so emotionally strong. You're so mentally strong," but that's not how I see myself at all. I don't know if you have watched Friends, Amy, but I am Rachel Green. I'm the girl who just cries. I just cry, like good or bad on a scale. If I'm living between a 4 and an 8, I'm fine. But anything more or anything under that, I'm crying. So I would love to know, being the expert, how is somebody who's mentally strong living day to day? Is it the fact that they can process emotions a lot quicker, that they don't necessarily get emotional? What does it mean for you?
Yeah, so another great question, because I think a lot of people believe that, like if you just push through really tough times, that somehow that means you're mentally strong, or if you're not scarred when you come out of trauma. But those things aren't true at all. And like crying is often a hallmark of mental strength because it takes courage. How many people go in the bathroom to cry, or they don't want to tell anybody that they're crying because it's scary. So it's really about knowing that, yeah, I can cry. I can express my feelings. I can experience them. How often do we run from something that feels scary because we don't want to feel anxiety? So sometimes it's just about embracing those emotions. And sometimes it's about just pushing ourselves to the limit. And people will often ask me, like, who's a mentally strong person from history, or who's somebody we can point out? But like, I really don't know, because I don't know what battles they're fighting in their brain, or I don't know what sort of things that they've been through in life. So like, who's mentally stronger? The person that gets up and gives a speech in front of 3 people, but they're terrified, or the person who doesn't care and they get up in front of 10,000 people? There's so many questions about that. And when you say your friend says you're mentally strong, I think people will often say that to somebody and they'll say, you know, "Oh, you're so strong." And it doesn't necessarily feel like a compliment sometimes, because we're like, "Oh, can't you see my pain? Or can't you see I'm struggling here?" So I think it's really important to note that getting through tough times is a sign of strength, but it's not just getting through it like unscathed. Like there's no badge of honor in saying, "I went through all this trauma and look at me now," because maybe you do have some scars and there's no there's no shame in acknowledging, yes, I struggle with this now because I went through this tough time, or I'm really dealing with this emotional issue. So I would say talking to people about your emotions is a sign of strength, showing those emotions, but knowing that you can do it in a socially appropriate way. For people who cry often, you probably don't want to be crying on a sales call, or you don't want to be crying when you're trying to have a good time with your friends, but to know that you can cry, but that you can also be in control of your emotions to the extent that you don't feel like, you know, you can't function in life because your emotions have completely taken over, or that it gets in the way of having a job or going to school. So we want to make sure that we have skills and tools that we can use to manage our emotions too.
And this is just a question that I'm thinking of now. In your experience, given what you've just said about talking and feeling safe to express emotions, to a degree, would you argue that women are mentally stronger than men on the whole?
I think it's more socially appropriate for women to talk about feelings than it is for men. And that a lot of men feel like they have to come across like they don't care, that they don't mind, that their feelings aren't hurt. And men often get rewarded more for, say, being angry than women. If a woman raises her voice in a meeting, people might say she's crazy or she doesn't have control of her emotions. Whereas if a man raises his voice in a meeting and we think, oh, he's showing a lot of passion. And so I think there are a lot of social issues that come into, like, how do you show emotions? You know, we are much more accepting of a woman who maybe is crying at work than a man who's crying because he has something going on in his personal life. So I think there are a lot of factors that I don't know how much of that is social versus how much of it might be a biological thing that, yeah, perhaps women are better equipped to deal with their emotions too. Or is it just because we've been socialized that way?
Oh, fascinating. And do you think, or is it our childhood that determines whether we grow to be mentally strong or not?
You know, it plays a big role, but you'll see some people who say, who struggle as adults, and they'll say, well, it's because I had a rough childhood and I never learned those skills. But you'll encounter somebody else who says, yeah, I'm really mentally strong because I had a rough childhood and I had to teach myself these skills, or I had to learn them all the hard way. So it all depends. I think that our adults in our life can play a huge role. If they acknowledge our feelings, if they validate how we feel, if they teach us skills, how do you deal with sadness? How do you manage anger in a healthy way? It goes a long way toward helping us later in life, but it's not to say that people can't learn those skills on their own too.
And how much does your friendship circle impact your ability to be mentally strong?
That's a great question. Because it really does impact us. And there's so much research into the fact that, yeah, you're the average of the five people you spend time with. But is it socially appropriate in your friendship circle to talk about struggles? Do you admit failure? Do you talk about your mistakes? Are you able to build each other up? Do you feel like if you go to your friends and say, hey, I got a promotion at work, that somehow they're going to be angry or jealous? Or do you feel like your friends would celebrate that? So certainly your friends play a huge role in your mental strength and your ability to grow as a person.
And what is the difference between being mentally strong and being confident?
So I would see confident as somebody who absolutely believes that they can do it. So if they were about to give a speech, I'll give that example again. They're like, yeah, I can get up there and I can crush it. Whereas a mentally strong person might think, I'm going to get up there and I'm going to do my best. It may go well, but it might not. But then they have confidence that they'll be okay, even if it doesn't go well. Like, my world doesn't 100% depend on this going well. So I think the difference is sometimes people who are mentally strong, they are confident, but in a different way. They're not necessarily confident that they're going to win, but they're confident that they can be okay, even if they don't win.
I love that. And do you think society is set up in a way which prevents women in particular from being mentally strong?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I wrote the women's book in particular, was because I wanted to talk about the 13 things mentally strong women don't do. But a lot of those things, the habits that come out, are because of societal pressures and the way that we're raised. And I guess the study that really inspired me to write the book was the one where they ask 5-year-old boys and 5-year-old girls to point to a picture of somebody that they think is brilliant. And they show them pictures of both men and women. And all the little boys pick out a man that they think is brilliant. And all the little girls pick out a woman that they think is brilliant. And then at the age of 7, they ask the kids the same question. pick out somebody who's brilliant. And all the little boys and all the little girls point to men. And you think, well, what happens between the ages of 5 and 7 that make the girls now think that men are brilliant? We go to school, right? And when we start school, we get told about astronauts and presidents and scientists and athletes and a lot of people who are historically men. And I think there are those things then that influence us into thinking that perhaps women are supposed to be a certain way and men aren't, and that men have advantages over us, and it takes a toll on us. So I think that there are lots of ways that girls are socialized. We're told we're pretty and boys are told they're smart, or so many things. I think just subtle differences in the way that boys and girls are raised and pressures from society that can certainly lead to unhealthy habits. And when we engage in those unhealthy habits, it eats away at our mental strength.
And for anyone who hasn't read the book, I have. It is amazing, your women's book. For anyone who hasn't read it, can you just touch on a couple of maybe the most common things that women who are mentally strong don't do? Maybe you have a favorite or one that you were asked about most.
Yeah, I think the one that I talk about the most often is probably comes to when women downplay their success. And it's a common one. And you hear the studies on, say, LinkedIn, where if a man has 6 years of experience, he'll really brag about how well qualified he is and how many things he's done in those 6 years. Whereas women might be more likely to say that they have a little bit of experience or they've have a couple of skills. We really downplay the achievements that we have and our success. And a way that this often plays out is when it comes to compliments. When women get complimented, somebody says, hey, I like your shoes. It's tough to just say thank you, even though it's just about our shoes, let alone if somebody says, hey, you did a really great job in that meeting last week. So they'll find that women are more likely to give a quick compliment back. Like, you like my shoes? Hey, I like your pants. Or we're really quick to deflect it. So that if somebody says, you did a really good job in that meeting, we're like, oh, it was everybody. Everybody else did a good job too. Because we're uncomfortable taking credit for doing something. Or we deflect it like, oh, it was nothing. Or we almost put ourselves down like, oh, I got lucky that day. Instead of saying, yeah, I actually worked really hard on that project. Thank you for noticing. I think that's just one way that it plays out, that we're uncomfortable owning our success. So I think it's super important for us to be able to be proud of ourselves, but to not be embarrassed or think that we're looking humble when we put ourselves down in public. Don't do that. Accept a compliment. Just say thank you. And it might feel uncomfortable, but it's really a stepping stone to then saying, you know, I am worthy of somebody praising me. And it's okay if this person says I did a good job. I can just say thank you and then sit with that uncomfortable emotion that gets stirred up.
Absolutely. I'm finding this so relatable because, for instance, I speak several languages. And whenever somebody compliments my ability on being able to speak several languages, I say, oh, yes, but I'm not that great at math. And that's not true. I am, but I've just got used to saying that because I think, oh, it will make the other person feel more comfortable. Or talking about the shoes, I'm known for wearing high heels. And whenever I'm complimented on my shoes, I always say, oh, well, being this petite, you know, I have to, like, I don't have a choice. So I'm very used to that. And, you know, I talked about this openly on the podcast before, having started my business when I was young. So when I was a teenager, I always laugh it off and I say, oh, the success is almost a fluke. Everyone's surprised in my family that I'm the one to have a business. And I do feel there's an element of not being able to accept the compliment, but also as women, we're worried about how we would be perceived for accepting the compliment. So you always want to make the other person feel comfortable. So you completely downplay it or make a joke out of it.
Yeah, those are great examples of how sometimes, yes, even if you are good at something, we then have to point out our flaws or something we think we're bad at, or we make something up that maybe isn't even true just to help the other person feel more comfortable. But we don't have to do that. It's okay to just say thank you, but it does. It feels uncomfortable when we're not used to doing it that way.
Yeah, they're great things that I need to stop saying, Amy. Speaking of vocab, is there any daily vocabulary that we use, women in particular, which prevents us from being mentally strong?
There is. Like, our words are powerful. So in just taking a look at what words do I use in my everyday life, and anytime you blame somebody else for the way you think, the way you feel, or the way you behave, you give those people power. So for example, you might say, my friend ruined my day. My boss makes me work late. My mother-in-law steals my time, makes me feel bad about myself. All of those things imply somebody else is in charge of your life. So a powerful way to take back your power is to just say, like, no, somebody said something and it hurt my feelings, but they didn't make me feel bad. Or so-and-so was in a bad mood, it affected my mood, but I didn't have to let it ruin my day. Or my coworker who talks a lot to me, they don't steal my time, I'm giving them my time. It's up to me if I want to set a boundary and say, hey, I don't have time to discuss that right now. And when you do that, like, it's tough at first because it means, hey, you're responsible. But on the other hand, it's also empowering because it reminds you, yeah, I'm responsible. How I spend my time today. And of course, there could be consequences. If you don't work late, you might get in trouble, but it's a choice. And just reminding yourself that you have that choice can be really freeing sometimes.
Completely. And what are some bad habits which prevent us from being mentally strong?
There are tons of them. I think one would be feeling sorry for ourselves, that we get caught up in the idea of being helpless and hopeless and thinking our situation's worse than everybody else's. And the more that we dwell on those things, then the harder it is to then pick yourself up and say, well, what am I going to do about it? And it's okay to be sad. Sad is part of the healing process. Like, it's 100% healthy to be sad when you've lost something, sad when you miss someone. And just embracing that can be helpful, but it's not helpful when you start thinking, and my life will never be good again, or I can't possibly do anything about it. That's when we get stuck. So I think it's important to pay attention to that, make sure that we don't let ourselves sit around and feel sorry for ourselves for too long. Another bad habit that people often think is helpful is venting. But like, there's no research that shows venting is helpful. In fact, most of the research shows that venting to other people just fuels those emotions. So if I had a bad day at work and I come home and I call my friends to complain about how bad my day was, you don't then suddenly be like, oh, I feel so much better. Often we just fuel that because now we're spending our evening thinking and talking about something that frustrated us 12 hours ago. And you give that thing more power over your life. We tend to think that we're like a pressure cooker. And if we don't talk about those things, we're going to explode. But that's actually not what the research shows. Instead, you might go home and talk about a completely different subject. Call your friends and talk about something pleasant, and you might make it a good night instead of making a bad day turn into a bad evening too. So I think really monitoring when we're complaining, like, what am I trying to get out of this? If I go to my coworker and I'm complaining about my boss, and my coworker doesn't have any power to fix the problem either, like, what am I looking for? What am I hoping to get out of this conversation? Because we'll think that, well, commiserating helps us bond, but you don't really want to bond with people over the negative stuff in life. That doesn't help us at all.
So women instinctively, they have a very tribal nature. When something does happen, I know the first thing that I want to do is I don't want to talk to my partner. I don't want to talk to any man. I'm either calling my mum or I'm calling my girlfriends because they are the best ones to almost bounce off of. And they give me such helpful advice. I love a little rant or event or just sharing what is going on. So sitting with everything you have just said then, to become mentally strong, the next time something happens in my day and I immediately want to pick up the phone, what should I do instead?
Well, so it's okay to pick up the phone. Sometimes getting emotional support from somebody else is huge. And sometimes our friends have a different perspective on it. And it might be, let's say somebody's struggling with a mean boss. And you might find when you tell your partner, if you have a male partner, that your partner is quick to be like, well, don't let it bother you. That's not the words we really want to hear because it is bothering us. So you might find that you have solace in a friend or a sister or a mother who can listen to you. But then what you want to do before you have that conversation is just ask yourself, like, what am I hoping to get? And maybe you're just looking for some validation for your friend to say, yeah, that's a really rough situation. Or you're looking for them to give you a different perspective. Like, hey, have you ever thought of sending an email or instead of talking? Or have you ever thought of this? And they might problem solve with you, and that can be really helpful. So I would say just knowing the agenda before you go into it, but deciding that you aren't going to make it into just a complaining fest of you share something bad about your day, your friend shares something bad about their day, and then you share something worse about your day. And it ends up just being this conversation where maybe you get stuck ruminating on how awful things are, how you feel like so many things are out of your control, because that can actually leave you feeling worse. Mm. So you want to make sure, like, yeah. And maybe you tell your friend before you start, like, hey, I'm having this issue at work. I know you can't solve the problem, but I'd love if you could just listen to me for a minute. And that can be helpful. Or maybe you could say, you know, I'm struggling with my emotions right now because I don't really know if what I'm, how I'm feeling. Maybe if I talk it out with you, you can help me figure out. I feel guilty, or I feel a little bit of regret, or I'm a little scared about something. And just knowing that, yes, there's a purpose for this conversation, not just fueling the uncomfortable emotions that we have so that we stay stuck in those uncomfortable feelings.
Are there any journal prompts which can help us develop resilience?
My favorite one would be to ask yourself, what did I do today to grow mentally stronger? Because there's so many things that are out of your control every day. You had a good day, you had a bad day. There's a million things that you didn't control, but you can always control if you grow mentally stronger. So your journal might be about how you were frustrated at lunchtime today, but you went for a walk instead of eating an extra slice of pizza, or how you had a conversation with somebody that was really scary to have, but you did it anyway, or you thought you were too tired to work out after work, but you pushed yourself and you did it anyway, and you're really proud of yourself. So asking yourself that question every day just reminds you that no matter what, you're in control of whether you do something that helps you grow mentally stronger. When you make a mistake, it's an opportunity to do better tomorrow.
Mm. And are there any positive affirmations which can help us develop resilience?
Yes. Sometimes people walk into a situation, and I think women in particular, we go into a situation just hoping to not lose. So if we're going to be in a meeting, we're like, ugh, I just don't want to say anything to embarrass myself. Rather than saying, I'm going to walk into this meeting and say something awesome, we just think, ugh. Or we think, I don't want to be the worst in the sales division. No way. You want to be the best. You want to do your best. So I think any affirmations that are about, you know, I'm here to do my very best can help us perform a lot better. The last thing you want to do is step into a situation and think, I just don't want to embarrass myself, or I just don't want to be come in last. Just remind yourself, I'm here to win. I'm going to do my very best. And so your affirmations might be anything from, you know, I'm going to be okay today. I'm going to do my best and I'll be okay no matter what happens. Just repeating that sometimes can drown out a lot of the negativity.
Is there anything else that you haven't mentioned that can really help? Because I know you're passionate about mental health. I'm somebody who struggles with anxiety, and obviously one in three people worldwide do as well. My anxiety has got worse as I have got older physically, you know, panic attacks, shaking, chattering, but I think I manage it emotionally a lot better, and I know how to deal with it, but sometimes it does come up, and you know, it's really, really bad, and it can prevent me from, you know, going out or doing a lot of things. So knowing that, then, for anyone who's listening who maybe struggles with, well, any mental health issue, to be honest, but you know, anxiety and or depression above all, what would you say to them? Is there anything that we haven't mentioned that can help people develop emotional resilience?
Definitely. I have the 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do workbook is the one that's filled with all sorts of practical exercises. But in a case where somebody is, so you just said you have anxiety. In a case like that, there are lots of options. So one is just accepting, yeah, I have anxiety sometimes. A lot of people, and the reason I say it's about accepting it is because a lot of people think, well, I can't have a good life because I have anxiety, or until I fix my depression, I won't enjoy life. But if you put it off until you feel better, it becomes this cycle where you don't do anything to make life better now. So the strategy is, how do I live the best life I can with the hand I was dealt? And I was dealt the hand of somebody that maybe has a nervous system that's a little hyperactive, and I feel anxiety, even though I'm maybe at home and I'm nothing horrible is about to happen, but my body's reacting as if I'm in a life or death situation when I'm sitting on the couch. And then just educating yourself about that, the physical symptoms that come with it, and then the thoughts that happen. When I get anxiety, I think about the worst case scenarios, and I'll have to remind myself, like, are these things likely, or is it just my anxiety talking right now? My anxiety will tell me that something bad's about to happen, that horrible things are definitely going to occur. Let's take a step back and say, you know, is this serving me well? Versus sometimes anxiety is helpful. when somebody comes to you with a get rich quick scheme and your anxiety kicks in, it's a really good thing. It's trying to keep you safe. So in recognizing that too, and then in having strategies to cope, we all have coping skills, but to figure out which ones are good for you and when do they work? So sometimes going for a walk can work. Sometimes meditation works. Sometimes it is calling a friend. Sometimes it's leaving the situation that's causing you to feel anxious, but to know that you can have a whole toolbox of skills and strategies that can help you. And sometimes it's trial and error. Like, oh, when I'm at work, sometimes I take a break and that helps. But because I can't always take a break, then sometimes I have a breathing exercise I do while I'm just sitting here, or I start thinking about my next vacation and that calms my body down. So just knowing that there are so many tools and that life is really about behavioral experiments, and what works for somebody else might not work for you, but you won't know until you try. And when you keep experimenting, you learn more about yourself and what works for you and in what situations they work best.
And how can you develop resilience but still not become hard towards the world? Is there a way to be gentle and soft but also mentally strong? I don't know why, because as I said at the very beginning of this conversation, one of my girlfriends said to me, whenever it was, a week, 10 days ago, that I'm so mentally strong and really emotionally resilient. And my mum says that to me as well. I personally can't see it. I think I'm quite emotionally fragile, but a lot of people around me say that I'm mentally strong. But equally, I feel that I'm so soft. So how could I be that emotionally resilient? But I'd love to talk about those people who, because I've been having this conversation a lot with a lot of my friends, that they almost find that because as they're adulting and life is getting tougher, they're becoming more resilient, but they're also becoming harder towards the world. So how can you strike that balance?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So I think a lot of people confuse like mental strength and acting tough. And for people who say like, nothing in the world bothers me, it does. You just can't admit that it does. So I think it goes back to knowing that you can acknowledge the pain that you have. You can certainly ask for help when you need it. Those are signs of strength. You can work on yourself. You can say, hey, I don't have all the answers. People who are willing to go to therapy are incredibly mentally strong. I mean, most people are like, no, I don't need a therapist. Well, it's because they're afraid to go to therapy. It takes courage to go to therapy and ask for help. And then to show compassion for other people. Absolutely. That takes courage too, to be able to put yourself in a place where you can experience empathy for other people and show kindness and compassion. Take strength. You might get rejected. You might get made fun of. The person might say no. So I think a lot of those things often get confused for weakness, but really those are all signs of strength.
And out of the 13 traits that are in the book, which one do you personally deem the most important?
Good question. I think not comparing ourselves to other people is probably one of the most important ones. We know that as women, we're just as likely as men to compare, but we often come up with a different result. So if a man were to look at a men's magazine where there are these idyllic looking men, a man's more likely to be like, I could totally be like that someday if I went to the gym and worked out. Whereas women, like when you look at the cover of a magazine and you see this incredible model on there, like, I don't know of any women that are like, actually, I could do that if I wanted to. Instead, we're like, oh, you know, why does she look so much better than I do? How come I can't be like that? Or when we see successful women like, oh, she must be so much smarter than I am. And then because we get into that trap of thinking other people are either better than us or below us, we lose sight of what our own goals are. So I always encourage people to write down your own definition of success. And when you see somebody else who maybe has something that you want, look at them as somebody that you could learn from. They're not your competitor. Maybe they could teach you something. And the research will show when we open our minds to that idea that the other person just has information that we could benefit from, not that they're better than us. Maybe they could teach us how to be successful in business, or we could learn how they go to the gym and look like they do. Then somehow it's like it opens up our minds to the fact that we're just as good as they are. And then when you feel better, you tend to do better.
Completely. And you are someone who has gone through a lot of trauma. So when someone does go through something, an inexplicable horror or trauma, what are the next steps they should take in order to navigate it in the best way?
We know that social support is one of the best things for trauma. So when people go through a shared experience, people that maybe were in a car accident together, or they were in a building and a natural disaster happened and they all had to stick together. Sometimes knowing that other people know what you've been through and talking to them about it after the trauma happens is really good for our brains and our healing process, because we're like, okay, that person knows what I've been through. But sometimes we go through trauma and it feels so isolating. Maybe you lose a loved one and you think, well, my friends can't relate because they haven't lost a parent, or somebody has a miscarriage and nobody knows about it because they didn't make their pregnancy public, so they don't feel like they can talk to people. That's when we know that trauma sometimes can really take hold and leave an even deeper scar. So it's so important to have somebody to talk to. And if you don't have friends and family that you feel like you can talk to, it might be about reaching out for a support group. There are tons of support groups. It could even be an online support group these days. If you have a rare issue that you think nobody in your local community can relate to, you can find somebody online all the way across the world who might be able to relate to it. Or it might be going to see a therapist, to have somebody to talk to say, you know, I went through this issue when I was 12, this issue when I was 22, and at the age of 30, I've been through this. And so my unique experience has led to X, Y, and Z. What do I do about it? And a therapist can help you. Because I think that's one of the most powerful things, to go through trauma and to have some kind of support while you're going through it, and people that you can talk to about it. And we also know that there are a lot of things that can heal trauma aside from talking about it. Exercise, yoga, things like that can be really powerful ways to help heal our brains and our bodies too, because it empowers us to be like, all right, I went through tough times, but I'm not necessarily a victim who's completely broken. I'm like a superhero who survived it. And it helps change that narrative that we tell ourselves. So instead of thinking bad things always happen to people like me, we see ourselves as that person who can get through really tough times and keep going.
How can you measure if you're a mentally strong person? You know, if someone was to read your book, and or if someone was coming to you as a complete clean slate and was reading your book, was taking part in the activities, had the journal prompts, had the positive affirmations, was navigating their, you know, challenges or just life obstacles in a very different way, how can you measure? How do you know when you're suddenly mentally strong?
So I think we're all a work in progress. And instead of comparing yourself to other people, it would be about comparing yourself to the person you used to be. So to ask yourself, is there something that I maybe thought I wasn't capable of doing 5 years ago, and now I'm able to do that thing? Are there things that I push myself to do now, even though they're really hard, but I keep pushing myself to do it? Am I growing as a person? Am I challenging myself? And it all depends. Like for somebody who maybe just going to the gym is terrifying and it takes them 3 years to talk themselves into going to the gym, versus somebody who's like, ah, I've been doing that for 20 years. That's not a big deal. But getting on a stage in front of five people would be terrifying. So that's the thing they're pushing themselves to do. Or somebody who says, you know, I don't have any friends, so I'm joining a club and that's incredibly terrifying. Or I signed up for a yoga class to meet people because I feel kind of isolated. Like all of those things are signs that we're growing stronger. So I would say just to take a look back at how you're growing, what areas in your life you've grown in, and the challenges that you still want to tackle, even though you don't know how it's going to turn out.
What can you do to increase your mental strength?
So it's similar to increasing physical strength. There are exercises that you can do every single day. And they can be simple things that only take a couple minutes. Practicing gratitude for 5 or 10 minutes a day, great way to increase your mental strength. It's simple, it's easy, it doesn't cost you any money. And you can do it any time of morning, noon, night, before you go to bed, whatever works for you. So that's just one example of an exercise. Another strategy might be something bigger, like scheduling time to worry. For people who worry all the time, setting aside 15 minutes a day to worry actually increases mental strength, because you can train your brain to not worry 24/7. Mm. So then when you say, all right, from 7 to 7:15 every evening, I'm going to worry. But whenever my brain tries to worry outside of that time, I'm just going to say to myself, it's not time to worry yet. And for the first 2 weeks, it's really tough. But after about the third week, people will come to my therapy office and say, hey, that's actually starting to work. Mm. I can now pay attention to what I'm doing in the moment because I know I can worry about it later. So I don't feel like I have to worry all day long. For some people, exercises might look like taking action. Like, okay, it's really tough for me to make phone calls because I have anxiety, but I'm going to make a phone call today. and they mark it on the calendar and they do it. For somebody else, it might be just tracking their mood. Okay, how do I feel throughout the day? Because I'm going to, through at the end of the week, I'm going to take an inventory. What's affecting my emotions? What kinds of things are helpful? So needless to say, there are tons of exercises we can do. It's all about the choices we make. And they all boil down to things that help us to think more realistically, to manage our emotions, and then exercises that help us behave more productively.
I was having this conversation with somebody the other day because I'm a very positive, glass half full kind of person. And I grew up really wanting to go into journalism. So it's really not a surprise that I started an online magazine. However, I have a master's in journalism. So you can imagine I was so passionate about the news. Like I would have notifications. I would watch Fox News, CNN, BBC, Sky all the time. And I was I really kept my finger on the pulse when it came to the news. But then with the pandemic and after the pandemic, I thought, you know what? What would happen if I suddenly stopped watching the news? If I stopped participating in such negative content? And I did. And I stopped reading newspapers to the same degree as well. But I was having this conversation with one of my friends the other day because he was saying to me, well, that's not realistic. You can't live like that. That he would much rather be a realist, even though I argued that was fairly cynical. So is there a category which you would say, oh, the people who are realists or optimists or pessimists, they're the ones who are most mentally strong, who are most emotionally resilient?
Yeah, so we know that realistic optimists do best in life. And by realistic optimists, because I say that because sometimes people are overly optimistic, and that's not good either. Like, let's say somebody's launching a new business and they're like, well, there's no way I could fail. Everything's going to go great. Well, that may not be an optimistic outlook because it could be unrealistic. You need to be prepared for the potential dangers and the downsides. But on the other hand, you don't want to launch a business thinking, well, I'm definitely going to fail, because guess what? You will. If you believe that there's no chance it's going to succeed, you won't. So we know that in life, realistic optimists do best. And by realistic, again, it might be confidence that not everything's going to turn out well, but that you'll be okay anyway, or that if your business fails, you have the skills, resources, tools, you can reach out to people who can help you, or that you'll maybe you have to close your business, but you'll go find a job and you're not going to end up in complete misery for the rest of your life. So, and in terms of the news, we do know the research is there that when we watch the news or we read articles about the news, our hormone levels go up. It takes about 20 minutes for our nervous system to calm down. So it used to be okay when people only watched the 6 o'clock news every night. You'd watch the news, shut it off, take about another 20 minutes after the news for your body to calm back down and for the stress hormones to stop being released. But in today's world where we get notifications on our phones all day, people are opening their phones and they're scrolling our computers, we're getting emails, and you're getting news all the time, that keeps you in a heightened state of alert. So I think there are ways to say, I'm going to be mindful about social media, or I'm going to be mindful about news. I'm going to be mindful about what I consume, what I listen to, because all of those things certainly affect our mental strength. You just want to be proactive about it so that you don't feel like these things are interrupting you all day long and you can't get your work done, but also that you can't function and that it becomes bad for your mental health.
We as humans do have to go through pain. We do have to go through challenges and obstacles. So do you think it is possible to become so mentally strong that then you almost, to the degree that you can avoid pain or can avoid feeling hurt?
I think we'll always experience pain, and uncomfortable emotions don't disappear, and we wouldn't want them to disappear. Because when we get relief from pain, that's actually some of the best pleasure in the world. So if I gave you a glass of lemonade and you might enjoy that, but if I give you a glass of lemonade after you just ran 2 miles and you're hot and you're sweaty, that glass of lemonade is going to taste so much better than if you just drank it. And we know that that's true with so many things in life, that when we go through hard times, that really helps us appreciate the good times. If life were always just even keeled, we wouldn't really recognize it as that. A good life. So we need the hard times. We need the pain to appreciate the pleasure. So I don't think that we'll ever eliminate pain. And I don't think that's a bad thing. we're still going to experience anxiety and worry about people and be sad. And that's okay. But instead, as we grow mentally stronger, we might be able to have more skills to manage those emotions in a healthier way and to know that we won't stay stuck in that place of pain forever.
Do you think therapy is a great tactic for anyone who wants to become mentally strong in your experience?
I do. I don't think the whole world needs therapy. I'm not one of those people that thinks we all need to go in and talk about our childhoods and try to heal every emotional wound. But I think it would be better if we looked at therapy as the same way that we looked at going to the doctor. It'd be good to have a checkup once in a while, or to run something past somebody, or to find out areas you might improve on, just to get some feedback from an objective person.
Who do you think should go to therapy then?
I think anybody who says, you know, my mental health issues are getting in the way of functioning. If you can't go to work on a regular basis, or you aren't working up to your potential, or it's interfering with your relationships, you should definitely get therapy. But also, if you're struggling with stress, or you're struggling with sleep, or you just have some questions that you want to run past somebody, where you can say, hey, am I on the right track here? Or this is going on. Is that normal? Sometimes just having an objective person to bounce that off can be helpful too.
And you're interviewed a lot, like on television, on podcasts, in, you know, magazines and things like this. Is there a quote or a subject that you find yourself being asked most about, like when it comes to your work?
I would say one of the most common questions is, like, what's the difference between mental strength and mental health? And that's a good one, because a lot of people will say, well, I wish I could be mentally strong, but I have depression. So I try to explain that mental strength, it's a lot like physical strength and physical health. You can go to the gym and you could lift weights and you could become physically strong, but it doesn't guarantee you won't ever get a physical health problem. You might still get high cholesterol someday. And it doesn't mean that you're weak or that you didn't do enough in the gym. That's just the way life works. Mental strength's the same. You can do tons of mental strength exercises and you might still develop an anxiety disorder, but that's not a sign of weakness. That's just how life is.
Do you have a favorite book of yours?
Oh, I have so many favorites and I have tons of them. Like, I live on a boat where I don't have a lot of room for books, but I always have tons of books laying around. One of my more recent favorites is Soundtracks by John Acuff, where he talks about the stories that we tell ourselves in our head and sometimes the mantras or affirmations that we live by that we might not even notice. And so he's not a therapist, but it's a really good book written. And I think it's something that a lot of us could relate to.
Yeah. What if you had to choose one of your books? Is it like choosing one between children?
You know, well, funny you say children. So my kids' book, 13 Things Strong Kids Do, was so fun to write. And I love to see kids reading it. I'll get Instagram pictures from parents with their kids reading it, because how amazing is that if we have kids that are learning about mental strength?
Yeah.
And if they learn it now, how much it could change their future. And that was why I wrote it. So many readers of my adult books said, I wish I had learned these things sooner. It could have changed the entire course of my life.
Amazing. I also end the podcast with two questions, Amy. The first being, what is your favorite quote or the mantra you live by?
One of my favorite quotes is, I have several, but I guess if I had to pick one, I would say, never let your morals get in the way of doing what's right. Would be one of my favorite quotes, I think, just because it's so easy sometimes to think that things are either right or wrong, or that they're black and white, and to know that sometimes doing the right thing might be stretching yourself to do things that you wouldn't have imagined at one point.
And finally, what books or podcasts on this subject would you recommend to our audience?
So I like the book Mindset by Carol Dweck. It talks about growth mindset. I think that's a really important book. And I like the James Altucher Show for a podcast. It's a little bit of everything in terms of how to and interesting guests and things about learning and some things about mental health, but also just about life in general.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Amy. It's been incredible having you on the podcast. Thank you for listening to the Smart Girl Tribe podcast. You are my community, my family. So for more motivation and inspiration, I'd love for you to join the Smart Girl Tribe Society on Facebook. Find us on Instagram @SmartGirlTribe and head to smartgirltribe.com
to find out about our next event. Please do subscribe and rate the show. It's the fastest way you can help us help you. Until next time.